This is Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily with Andrew Hustler Patterson and Michael Remus.
Afternoon, ladies and gents. What is up? Andrew Patterson here with you along with Michael Remus for another, I guess we can't say award-winning episode of Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily because we've only been doing this for 1 month, but today is an anniversary show. 1 month in. It's great to have you all with us. And man, we've got a great show today. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN will join us in about 10 minutes or so. And then we enter Weeb's world. Ken Weeb, Kenny and Rennie, Sportsnet contributor, our good friend Ken Weeb's going to join us about 1:40 or so. And we'll get the latest on the Jets, get ready for this Jets-Habs game tonight, discuss Blake Wheeler's absence from the lineup, and get Ken's thoughts on the upcoming NHL trade deadline. As always, Winnipeg Sports Talk is brought to you by Not Auto Corp, Boston Pizza, Winnipeg, the Nick and Nikki DQ Group, Royal Sports, Breezy Bend, Aikens Lake, and our betting partner at Coolbet. We'll do the lines for Coolbet a little bit later on. And of course, we'll also be taking a close look at the Masters leaderboard throughout the afternoon. But before we get going on everything else, let's welcome in my partner in crime, Michael Remus, back from the mothership, the command center. Remo, what's going on, my man? Yeah, exactly. Not a criminal operation. Everything above board right now. And you know what? We've met with lawyers, accountants, tech people, now bank people. I think we're a month in. The shows are going well. The response has been great. And I think we're getting close to actually having our bleep together. We've been working hard. The show's going and we should have a great one today. Getting a lot of comments already from folks in today on Twitter and in the chat about the little announcement that CJOB made this morning. We at Winnipeg Sports Talk, very excited to work with CJOB, the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, we have so many friends over there, starting with the legend Bob Irving, of course, Kelly Moore doing, kind of being the quarterback for all of their Jets coverage. My good friend Paul Edmonds, Jamie Thomas, and of course, guys like Ryan Brandt, who's over there now, Skylar Peters. So the whole gang, really looking forward to doing some stuff on OB. And we're actually going to end this stream a little bit earlier than we have been lately because I'm going to be jumping on with Hal Anderson at 2:15. If you want, pop in and do that. And then I'll be kicking it with Ted Wyman and Kelly Moore at 4 o'clock off the top of the Jet pregame show. And I'll be popping on there, occasionally when they need me, when they want to chat with me. But on Fridays on OB, four times a day, we'll be loading up the bazooka with some hot takes for a little bit of commentary from yours truly, and that'll be playing four times a day. And honestly, I mean, it's a great opportunity to get back in with CJOB, and most importantly for us, Reem, it's a great opportunity for folks that maybe aren't aware of what we're doing here on Winnipeg Sports Talk to let them know what we're doing and where they can find us.
Yeah, believe it or not, not everyone is already on YouTube searching for Winnipeg Jets. Not everyone is on Twitter and Facebook. So it is a great opportunity for you to go on the station with a very wide reach and reach some other Jets fans who may not be aware of the quality content when we're not, muted that's coming out here.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do any unboxings on the radio, unfortunately. That we'll keep that for the stream.
Yeah, I got some boxes upstairs. Maybe we'll save them though.
We don't have a little Friday. A Friday unboxing would be excellent. And you know what? And part of this, really working with OB, listen, I kind of rolled this out. This is an incredible opportunity for us to, kind of try to increase the profile of Winnipeg Sports Talk. But equally as important to be able to work with some of the great people on OB, and I cannot wait. Tomorrow, Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, best in the biz, in my opinion, is going to join us at 1:15. And we're also going to talk to some of the folks from the Kraft Hockeyville from St. Adolph. Tomorrow is the day to start voting, so we all want to get behind them and make that happen. And our good friend Kyle Ballharry, Balls and the digital team, the content team at the Jets have been working so hard throughout the year to put together these episodes that we've been watching at the intermissions or on the Jets website, the 10th anniversary. So looking forward to having Balls in. Talk to him a little bit about how different it is working in a COVID environment as well. That's a very different job without fans in the stands. But it should be great. And you know what? I may as well let people know this here. I mean, the folks that are with us are most loyal people that are with us in the YouTube every day. Not only am I going to be doing some stuff on OB, but actually beginning tomorrow, got a really awesome opportunity to take it outside of Winnipeg. And I'm actually going to be doing some shows on Sportsnet in Calgary. So tomorrow, if you want to make a note, 4 to 7 Winnipeg time, 3 to 6 in Calgary, I'll be jumping on with Pat Steinberg and the guys, and they're going to do that a few more times this month and see how it goes. So really excited about that opportunity. But again, first and foremost, our priority is here. Our priority is Winnipeg. It's Winnipeg Sports Talk, and it is the Winnipeg Jets right now. And Michael Remus, Jets back at it tonight without their captain for the first time in a long, long time, going up against the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, Hus, I mean, it's pretty rare that Blake Wheeler misses a game, but I tweeted out the video on Twitter yesterday, it's where you tweet stuff, of the Tkachuk elbow. We talked about it yesterday. I thought it was a questionable hit. I think it should have been looked at. Blake Wheeler is going to be out. He had the bit of a cut immediately after, played the rest of the game, thought, you know what, maybe better safe than sorry, not going on the road trip. So I'm curious what the power play is going to look like without Blake Wheeler, how they're going to fix that. They did move Andrew Kopp to play with Dubois and Stastny, and they're going to be relying on that top line, Ehlers, Connor, Scheifele as well. And, you know, with the third line, Matthew Perreault moving up too to play with Appleton and Lowry. So I'm excited to see what they bring in the fourth line as well. Thompson, Lewis, and now Harkins is the one who steps in. So I think they're going to be just fine, not taking anything away from Blake Wheeler. Great player, but the Jets have so many strong forwards that they will take, obviously, a slight step back, but I don't think it's like a catastrophic thing that he's not in line. But obviously, for the playoffs, you want him to be healthy. I think that's the goal here.
Well, and they haven't confirmed that it is a concussion, and I certainly hope that it isn't. But if it is, that it's minor, that Blake Wheeler, you know, comes back and gets some rest. I will say this. It's a little different, I guess, when you're talking about head injuries because of the unknown with that. But, I mean, Wheeler is about as reliable a player as there is in the National Hockey League, and you would assume that he'll be back soon. But I will say, Remus, that let's just say Blake misses the next 2 weeks or even 3 weeks. We all know where the Jets are in the standings right now. They're all but guaranteed of a playoff spot. And when you think about what Wheeler went through earlier this season and talking to people close to the team, it was very apparent that Blake Wheeler was far from 100%. A couple weeks off before things get real come playoff time, I think for a guy with the amount of miles on the odometer that Blake Wheeler has, I think could be really, really good for the player and the team. And again, the caveat, of course, is that, you know, if this was just a nick or something like that, you know, you don't know what the story is with a concussion. And that's always more concerning than, a sprained ankle or whatever it is. But I guess my point is, I don't think that 2 or 3 weeks off for Blake Wheeler at this time of the year before what will hopefully be a long, very tough playoff run will be a bad thing for either he or the team as long as he comes back in full health.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, if anything, this is a plus. I mean, Blake Wheeler, we talked about it yesterday, how he's going to be missing more games during this stretch than he's missed in the last 10 years. He's over 30, so, you know, the body, it reacts a bit differently to stuff than when you're a bit younger. So what's important for Blake Wheeler, Hus, is to be 100% and rested for the playoffs. We know he was battling some injuries. He wouldn't admit to that, but it's speculated that he was battling something at the beginning of the season. He clearly wasn't 100%. And so we know what the playoffs are going to be. You know the teams in the Canadian division. It's all a matter of seeding. And if Blake Wheeler, if he can rest up now and be, you know, primed to go and in top shape for the playoffs, I think that's what's important. He's, again, over 30. And who knows how many more shots the Jets will have at the playoffs. This is a great opportunity for them to try and get into the semifinal before the Stanley Cup if they can come out of this Canadian division. And they have a very good chance to do that.
Yeah, there are some hard miles on Blake Wheeler, and getting him in the shop for a couple weeks. I think, and the other thing, of course, is that it does give some opportunities to some other players to, you know, play up in the lineup where they might be needed come playoff time. Andrew Kopp's done an amazing job with Appleton and Lowry, but he has shown this year that he is capable of more, and I'm sure he's quite excited about the opportunity to move up into the top six. You mentioned Matthew Perreault, Reem. I mean, to me, Perreault has been I don't know whether we should say it's a real surprise, but, you know, he has played some of his best hockey we've seen in a long time over the course of the last couple months. So, having Matthew Perreault get the opportunity to move up from that fourth line where he, along with Thompson and Lewis, had been really effective. I think it'll be good for Perreault. And then there's Jansen Harkins. And you just sort of have to feel for Hark because, you know, when he's been in the lineup, I think he's acquitted himself well. He's just been the victim of numbers on a very deep team that up until now has had very little injury adversity, touch wood, so far this season. But you know Harkins will be ready to go. And as he said today in his Zoom availability, he's looking to do whatever the team wants him to do to help the team win and for Harkins personally to try to stay in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's a great attitude. And when he's been in the lineup, he's played very well. So, I'm emailing with Greg Wyshynski. I got to resend him the link. But he's played well, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. And Frank did mention yesterday that he's got to hit the 10-game threshold to fulfill some expansion draft requirements.
Yeah, like for the record, I had a couple people hit me up on that, and that is true. The Jets right now are not compliant. But you know what? If Harkins does not get into those necessary games, the easiest thing for the Winnipeg Jets to do, and I don't think it would be that difficult, would be to extend Nate Thompson or extend Trevor Lewis for another year so that they're under contract, they would fulfill the qualifications, and they would be available to Seattle. But for their side of things, they would have a contract for next season, and we know how difficult it is for, you know, older free agents, UFAs, and what the market was like last year. So I think the way the season went for both of those guys, if the Jets made that sort of offer, it would probably be pretty simple to get done, and then they'd handle it that way. So not a huge concern right now for the Winnipeg Jets. I think most importantly, they want to get, you know, a guy like Harkins just into the lineup and get back on the ice. It has been a long time. Christian Vesalainen is now the extra. He's been recalled from the taxi squad, so he's your 13th forward right now, but it will be Harkins going in, playing along with Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis on the Jet fourth line. So we'll get to Greg Wyshynski in just a couple minutes. Of course, this show brought to you by our friends at Knott Auto Corp. Why not get into the vehicle of your dreams at a great price with the help of the Knott team? So many different makes and models, including a number of Teslas coming in on a weekly basis. And as I told you last week, read about it in the Free Press. Martin Cash did an article. Trevor Knott, they'll take Bitcoin for your vehicle as well, if you'd like. And if you're looking to consign something, Knott Auto Corp will help you out. See them at Waverly and McGilvery, or check them out online at knott.ca. And Royal Sports, you know, I mentioned spring is here. And whether it's soccer or baseball or new fitness gear or bikes, Royal has pretty much everything covered for you, a one-stop shop. I was in there. They've got a ton of disc golf equipment. No, I've never played disc golf. I had a friend that had some. We ripped it around in the backyard, and I always wanted to do it. Now that I'm seeing the disc golf equipment out there, I'm getting an idea maybe for the first ever Winnipeg Sports Talk Open. We'll do it at Happy Land there across from Teasers. They apparently have a nice course. So that might be a summer activity if we can gather outdoors and make that happen. But the reason why disc golf was somewhat interesting is that Bryson DeChambeau, who normally spends 14 hours a day at the golf course, did not play at Augusta yesterday. Where was he in the afternoon? He was golfing. He was disc golfing for the second time. Some really neat stuff online. Met up with the man who was out there with two of his kids and ended up playing around to disc golf. He learned some tips, and he's just about to tee off right now at the Masters. Speaking of the Masters, let's take a quick look at the leaderboard for those of you. Good luck, and thanks to everyone that played in our DraftKings pool. Four at the top. Webb Simpson, Hideki Matsuyama, and Mark Leishman all at 4 under par. 3 under is Brian Harman and Christian Bezuidenhout. Now, I believe that was one of the Z-Man's picks from earlier this week. And Will Zalatoris, he was talking about as well, a Masters debutante, 2 under par through 18. You got Patrick Reed, Paul Casey, Sungjae Im, 2 under through 3. Very nice start for the big Korean. And Siwoo Kim, 1 under through the through it. We got Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson, both at 1 under. And the top Canadian right now is Mac Hughes, 1 under, making the turn after 9. Moving down a little bit, you know, Corey Connors had sort of a frustrating day today. You know, he got to 2 under par on 10, gave a couple back, was even on the 16th, hit a beautiful shot to about 8 feet, missed the putt, and then missed, I don't know, a two-footer coming back. So basically turned a birdie into a bogey. So not a great start for Corey Connors, but he's right in the mix there. He's one over par. Teeing off late, you've got the likes of Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, and a couple of other stars. Looking, if you're wondering where Rory McIlroy is today, you got to go down. Brooks Koepka had a rough morning. He's four over par. Rory's four over par. And yikes, I was so high on Sergio Garcia the way he's playing. He's four over par as well. So definitely some big numbers for some of the players that, you know, we would normally think that would be maybe closer to the top of the leaderboard as opposed to the bottom. But as I said, Hideki Matsuyama, Webb Simpson, and Mark Leishman right now all tied at four under at the Masters. And we'll have more updates coming up a little bit later on. All right, let's get back to some hockey. Ken Wiebe. Weeb's World up in about 20 minutes or so. We'll get ready for Jets Habs and get Ken's takes on the upcoming trade deadline. But let's get right to it. What a pleasure it is to welcome in our good friend from ESPN, Greg Wyshynski, to Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. We've had a lot of fun talking about Wish's pieces in ESPN with the interviews on the top 10s. And of course, we've got the trade deadline, so lots to get to. Wish, thanks so much for doing this. And great to have you for the first time here on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. How are you?
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, a perfect timing to get you in today. I mean, before we talk about the list and the upcoming trade deadline, already had a pretty significant deal last night in the NHL. Lou Lamoriello, it's funny. We were talking yesterday about Taylor Hall and where he might fit. And, you know, there's a lot that said, you know, maybe the Islanders with what they're looking for would be Taylor Hall. And then we thought, is Taylor Hall really a Lou Lamoriello type guy? And, well, it seems like he went just down this road to Jersey to get his guy Palmieri and Travis Zajac coming over. What did you think of the deal, and what are the Islanders getting in those two players? You see the Devils quite a bit.
Hey, he knows Jersey pretty well, that Lou Lamoriello. I think it's a smart move. I actually think there probably could be a case made that Kyle Palmieri was the best winger available at the trade deadline, depending on how you feel about Taylor Hall's season. You know, Palmieri didn't have a great year either, but I think he's got proof of concept in the previous seasons. When he was a consistent 20-goal scorer, you could see that his shooting percentage just wasn't where it should be this season. And then maybe a change of scenery, a change of center could change that. So I like that move for them. Obviously, they needed to do something on the wing with Anders Lee being out for the year. They get a good veteran to fill in that role. Zajac's kind of a throw-in, but he helps fill out what is one of the deeper center spots in that division. Maybe in the entire league, when you think about Barzal, when you think about Brock Nelson, Cizikas, and now you've got Zajac in that mix too. So it's a pretty deep group, along with Pageau too, of course, in that group as well. So I like it from the Islanders' perspective. They didn't really have to give up much. A first rounder in this draft, as I've written about recently, is not the same as a first rounder in previous seasons, due to the lack of scouting, due to the lack of being able to see these guys in person, some leagues not playing, international tournaments not happening. There's a lot of mystery to the draft, and I've had some GMs tell me they're not even looking to get first-rounders this year because of that mystery. For the Devils not to have pulled a prospect, a known commodity out of the Islanders for two good players and retained salary, it was kind of a surprise, but I think the trade market will tell us whether or not they did get ultimately good value for what the market was willing to pay.
We heard a lot about Palmieri potentially being moved. Zajac, not as much. And I mean, 35 years old, he's a Winnipeg guy, over 1,000 games with the New Jersey Devils. Was it surprised that he moved? And how much gas is left in the tank for Travis Zajac? And what did he do this year? His number's not too bad.
He's all right. Like, his bread and butter was always as a defensive centerman, and I think that he's lost a bit of a step to that end. He's been a penalty killer for them throughout his career. I think he's not had the best season on special teams either. I mean, he's a nice complementary player if you've got depth at center, if you're not looking for him to do too much other than be maybe your fourth line guy and a good guy to have around the locker room. But as far as his availability and his value, I mean, we didn't think of either of them because he has a no move or a no trade clause. One of the two, he controls where he goes, put it that way. So the thought was always, all right, he's been in Jersey for like 15 years. He's going to probably either stick around the Northeast or come home to Winnipeg. And the Jets you know, clearly don't have a really a need at forward right now. I think everybody's pretty happy with that part of the team. And I think for Zajac, obviously, a reunion with the general manager who drafted him, a chance to play for a Stanley Cup, and the Islanders obviously are entrenched in a playoff spot right now. Have went to the conference final last year. A lot to like about that spot for him, which I imagine is why the opportunity was presented to him, and he decided to waive the no trade to go to the Islanders.
Many other interesting teams heading into Monday, but you mentioned the Jets, so we may as well get right to it. What are you hearing about Kevin Cheveldayoff? The wants, certainly the conversation here in Winnipeg is what can they do to, you know, help a blue line. I mean, they've got elite talent up front. They've got arguably the best goaltender in the league, number two on your list. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the defense has been a source of concern. They've been getting by. The results have been pretty good. But again, the playoffs is an entirely different beast. Jets, defense, deadline, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, having the second best goalie in the league is a good way to paper over a lot of your problems in the blue line. But, I mean, it's been a problem, obviously, since they lost four or six guys before the 2019-20 season. They've never really been able to rebuild the blue line in a satisfactory way, in my opinion, since then. And obviously with the way that Morrissey's played this year, it's been a frustrating part of the team. Everything else seems to be clicking pretty well, and they are a dangerous team in that division, but they clearly need to add something to that blue line. The question is what? I think the focus is going to be on that more defensive defenseman type, maybe even somebody who can move up and play with Morrissey and pair with him. So you start thinking about who those types of players are going to be. The Matthias Ekholm situation has been an interesting one to follow because the Nashville Predators obviously are back in a playoff hunt, which I think is going to knock him down a lot of the trade boards vis-a-vis his availability. So then you start looking around and thinking about other options. Alex Goligoski of the Arizona Coyotes has a expiring contract. They're a team in a playoff race, but I think they would move him for the right package coming back the other way. And then the most intriguing name, I think, is probably a player from a team that the Jets have certainly done some business with this year, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and that'd be David Savard. Good defenseman, solid physical defenseman, and a player where I think you can make the money work if you maybe threw in a Matthew Perreault type, maybe one of the defensemen that are currently in that group, and send it back the other way with some salary retention from the Blue Jackets. Maybe they don't want to do any deals with Kevin Cheveldayoff, considering how the last one worked out. But I think if they did, David Savard would be a very intriguing choice if they were able to swing something like that.
Wish, in your opinion, if Ekholm is off the market because of the way Nashville has played themselves back into a playoff race, would Savard be the best fit? Taking away cost, but just as far as an ad goes, is Savard the best guy the Jets could get as far as what we think is available?
No, the best guy the Jets could get would be Josh Manson from the Anaheim Ducks, who like Ekholm, has another year left on his contract. So there's obviously some expansion draft conundrums there, depending on what you want to do with your group. But he's better than Savard, and he's better than Goligoski, and he's better than any of the other defensive defensemen that are on the market. The problem is he's also going to cost the most. You know, you're going to have to kick over a first-rounder and a prospect to the Anaheim Ducks for his services. I think a team like the Jets should certainly be in the business of trying to go after someone like a Manson. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, who obviously the Jets have to keep an eye on insofar as trade deadline as well, should be in the market for someone like Manson if they can make the money work. If he's available, I think he's a cut above the other players that would be in the mix if Ekholm's off the board. But he certainly will come with a hefty price tag. They've been very, very careful with him as an asset through the years, and I don't think that changes even if they are looking to move him.
Greg, you mentioned Columbus, and it will not surprise you at all that since the big deal earlier this year, a lot of people in this market have spent a lot more time watching the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, there's still tons of people here that are huge fans of Patrick Laine, Jack Rossovic too, for that matter. And it has been at times painful to see what is going on with that player and Columbus. I mean, how much of a mess is it? Is it as bad as it looks from the outside?
Yeah, it's terrible. He's bad. He's been very bad. And Rossovic, you know, it's funny. Like, for a while, it looked like it was going to be the Jack Rossovic trade, right? And then all of a sudden, he starts getting a healthy scratch from Tortorella. Look, I think what you hope if you're the Blue Jackets is that once the coaching situation is changed after the season, and I don't see any way that it's not changed after the season, that maybe somebody comes in with a different tone and tenor, with different expectations, a different system, and you can try to get more out of that asset than you've gotten right now, because it's just been a very lopsided trade so far. Obviously, Jalmari Kekäläinen is a huge fan of Laine, had coveted him previously, and will try to make it work any way he can, but it's not, that's not gone well, that's for sure, in Columbus for a pretty talented player.
It really is stunning. I mean, I was having a beer with a friend last night, and, you know, we were just talking about, you know, like, as an 18-year-old, he had 36 goals, 44 the next year. He had 18 in a month the following year after, and then since then, it's just been a slow, steady decline. The talent is all still there. It's just really, really difficult to, you know, identify what has changed so much. And, you know, often you could always say, well, you got to play with better players. There was the whole business here about all being on the top line. But at a certain point, a lot of it does come down to the player himself.
Right. But I also think it comes down to what the expectations on the player are. I'm somebody who believes that it is quite all right in the National Hockey League to have players, be it forwards, be it defensemen, that just score. That's all they're there to do. Go up and down the ice with the puck in the net. That's your job. And I feel like the thing about Laine, whether it was in Winnipeg or elsewhere, is the dedication of tournament to a 200 player. And I understand that. I mean, you're paying him a lot of money. In order to win in this league, you do need competent defensive players. That's for sure. You don't need liabilities out there. But I'm kind of willing to maybe let it slide when someone can score like Laine can score. So we'll see what they do going forward. I mean, obviously, you're not getting that kind of break with John Tortorella as your coach. He is going to drill it into you that you have to play a certain way, and if you don't, you're not going to play. But maybe if you had a different personality and a different approach behind the bench, things could be different for Patrick Laine.
Yeah, hard to believe there could be a player that is getting paid more and having a more miserable season than Laine, but I give you Taylor Hall. it's stunning. I mean, he scored, what, two shifts into the season and has one goal since. We know what the Buffalo story is. What has this season done to the value of Taylor Hall in the market as far as the trade deadline goes, and in your opinion, next year when he's an unrestricted free agent again?
Well, I guess we'll find out on the trade deadline front. I mean, the price for Kyle Palmieri was the first. So that's what the Sabres have been looking for. I think it's what they still assume they're going to get for Taylor Hall. But the bigger question is, what's the marketplace for him? You know, I think you look around this league and there are contenders that, if salary is retained, I think would like to add Taylor Hall to their mix. I mean, the Avalanche, the Bruins, the Leafs. These are all teams that I think could use Hall in the right way. And, you know, in some of those situations, I think he'd be able to kind of just do his thing and not worry about the overwhelming pressure. And by that, I mean going to Colorado versus being in Boston or Toronto. But we'll find out what his value is at the trade deadline. I think he is a diminished asset based on his results this season. If you look at his underlying numbers, he's done some good things. I think he's trying. His expected goals percentage isn't underwater by any means, for example. So there are reasons to get him beyond reputation. But I do wonder, at the end of the day, will teams just try to take advantage of the fact that he's had a bad season to get what could amount to be a bargain on Taylor Hall at the deadline?
You know, just on that topic, looking ahead to the offseason in the COVID world that we're living in right now, and I know things are a little bit different and getting more back to quote unquote normal south of the border than they are here right now. But I mean, I just look at the Winnipeg Jets, and the Jets are getting big contributions from guys like Derek Forbort, Trevor Lewis, Nate Thompson have all been regulars, have all helped the team. They're all on cheap 1-year deals. How do you see free agency in general going next year? And how bad of a time is it for, you know, guys in the Taylor Hall category that are coming to market thinking that this is their chance for a big deal, considering what's happening financially in the league?
It's terrible. I mean, it's terrible because you're going to have a flat cap again, and you might have a flat cap for years beyond that. It's terrible because, you know, I feel like we don't have a real appreciation for how much these teams are losing this year financially. Like, I know Gary Bettman has used the B word billions to describe what the league is losing, but I had a GM tell me a couple of weeks ago, look, you know, there's a hesitancy to push all our chips in at the trade deadline because the deeper we go in the playoffs, the more money our franchise is going to lose. It's the fact of life. When you don't have your buildings at capacity, then you can't make money. And the, you know, you have to cover the cost of travel. You have to cover the cost of COVID protocols. You have to cover the cost of everything that goes with being a playoff team while not getting the revenue you would normally be getting for it. And so there's a thought of the more successful you are, the more money you're going to lose. And that plays into the whole thing, too, about, you know, how much money they're going to have available and how much money they're going to be willing to spend on talent in the offseason. It's a multi-year recovery from what we've experienced over the last calendar year with COVID and the way that the economics in the National Hockey League have changed. But I think the biggest two influences on the free agent market are going to end up being the flat cap, and then as sort of an ancillary thing, how the expansion draft ends up playing out insofar as, you know, if a team maybe loses a player or two they didn't expect to.
ESPN's Greg Wyshynski with us here on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. You know, Wish, for the majority of the season, we were cruising here in the North Division. Canadian teams playing each other. It was wonderful. There was a scare with the Habs. They got sat down for a month, for a week. But we've now had, I think, undoubtedly the most serious situation when it comes to the virus with the Vancouver Canucks. How do you see this playing out? Will the Vancouver Canucks play 56 games, and should they?
Yeah, the worm has certainly turned. All you guys are so happy with your situation up in Canada, making fun of us. I got my vaccine yesterday, baby. It's all candy and roses down here in the States. No, it's terrible everywhere. I think they will find a way for Vancouver to play their 56 games. You know, again, we go back to the financial side of things, which really hasn't gotten too much attention, I think, versus the calendar when it comes to Vancouver. But if you don't play 56 or don't play a certain amount of games, then you got to do make goods with your sponsors and make goods with your advertisers in the following season. It's the reason we had the bubble last year, so everybody could play out a certain number of games and not lose money based on the next season's revenues. I think the calendar will allow them to finish the season. But if they don't, the NHL has had contingency plans to seed the division by points percentage since the start of the season. And I had players telling me, look, you know, throughout the season, look, we know when we step on the ice, there's a chance that our team might not play 56 games. You know, so we have to take every game seriously and know that, you know, every game really matters because we don't know if it's going to be cut short at some point. So if they can't play 56, I still think it's okay. We all realize this is an anomalous season and everybody's going to have to just make do. But I do think that they're going to find a way to get those games. It might be ugly. We might stop talking about guys testing positive for COVID and start talking about guys collapsing after playing 4 days in a row. But they'll get those games in.
Wish, let's talk about the lists. You've got nothing that's more great sports radio fodder than top 10 lists and ranking players. And you had some fun, but tell us about the research that went into it, because this wasn't just you deciding who your top 10 players were. You talked to some players, GMs, executives. Tell us about how the whole project came together before we talk about the results.
Yeah, it's you know, we wanted to get the insider perspective on these rankings instead of just doing them ourselves, which frankly would have been a lot easier. but we got 10 skaters, three goalies and seven skaters, I should say. And then we got 10 team officials, some coaches, some GMs, some player personnel people to rank their top 10 centers, their top 10 wingers, their top 10 goalies, and their top 10 defensemen. And the lists were really interesting. I think in some cases you could have predicted a lot of the top finishers. I mean, you know, Victor Hedman is the best defenseman, Connor McDavid is the best center. These are all things that we could anticipate. But in other cases, there were definitely some surprises. I think the goalie ranking was all over the board once you got past the top three or four. And then on the center one, I had one coach tell me he could have gone top 20 on the centers when you think about how many great centers there are in the league right now. And I think he's right. We presented a pool of 30 players. They picked the 10 best, and you had players like Evgeny Malkin and Mark Scheifele and Ryan O'Reilly that were on the outside looking in. So it was a very, very competitive list at that center position.
And always some unique votes. I mean, one person had Jack Eichel as the number one center. He had some guys that, you know, weren't given Leon Draisaitl very much love. When it came to the centers, was there one vote or lack thereof that, you don't have to say who it was, but that really sort of stood out to you that maybe people aren't, or whoever it was, wasn't quite paying attention?
Well, it was more of the, I mean, there are some guys that like left off McKinnon, so I assume that's just a clerical error. But, you know, I think for me, it was more about the philosophy of it. I mean, I had people that, you know, I talked to a lot of the people that cast votes for this project, and it seemed like a lot of them were really valuing the 200-foot center versus someone who excels on the offensive side. So, in other words, I had some people that were kind of detracting from an Austin Matthews or a Jack Eichel because they don't do what a Patrice Bergeron or a Sasha Barkov or a Ryan O'Reilly does so well, which is play a complete game. To me, as I mentioned with the Laine thing before, like if you're Austin Matthews and you score goals at a clip that we haven't seen since Mario Lemieux, I'm okay with that. I don't necessarily need you to always play D. It's cool. But I do understand the sentiment. So that was interesting. And then the other thing too was the name that came up so many times in my conversations with people was O'Reilly. As like the prototypical two-way center, the guy you want on your team, the guy who could put up points and win the Selke, almost kind of putting him over players like Barkov and Bergeron, but he didn't make the cut. He finished 11th right behind Matt Barzell, and that was a real surprise based on how much love he was getting from the people that I spoke to.
Now, Vasilevskiy, Hellebuyck, 1-2-2-1, I can completely live with that. It was interesting to see Carey Price get number 3, and I think that, you know, maybe a bit more of a Lifetime Achievement Award. This year he hasn't been great, but I was wondering how long ago these votes were put in, because it was stunning to see Lehner ahead of Fleury the way he's played this season. And, I mean, we could do an hour on Carter Hart and what's happened to him, you know, on that topic alone. But there were some goalies that were on that top 10 list that, when you look at least the, quote, what have you done for me lately numbers, have not been that good.
The voting was done through the first part of the season. I do think when it comes to the goalies, there was a certain amount of leeway given to this season because it's been kind of weird. Like, no one's going to look at Carter Hart and what he did this season and say, this guy's garbage. Like, he's clearly good. Like, he's clearly going to be a real good goalie in this league. And I think you could say the same for a few of the other goalies that have struggled this year. So I think that there was a certain amount of leeway given to that. The Carey Price thing, I'll never understand. Like, there are certain players in these rankings where the opinion and insight from outside of the NHL versus what the people in the league see couldn't be more different. I think Carey Price is probably exhibit A in the fact that everybody on the outside can see what his numbers look like, can see what his underlying numbers look like, and not be impressed. Jake Allen has outplayed Carey Price this season. But I straight up asked this veteran defenseman that I talked to for the survey, I'm just like, why do you guys always put over Carey Price? Like every time you do one of the NHLPA polls, like, Carey Price is winning it. What is it about Carey Price? And he's just like, Carey Price is the man. I'm like, all right, well, there you go. I forget the stats, forget all the other stuff. Carey Price is the man. So, I mean, how do you argue against that? They just, that's his status amongst his peers. It's just that if you need a goalie and you need a win, he's right up there with Vasilevskiy and Hellebuyck.
Greg, I got to tell you, it was great to see ESPN getting back in the hockey game. I put up the website. We got NHL in the top bar. I know you, Emily, and the team will be getting ready for Monday. What do you guys have cooking for trade deadline?
The usual. I mean, it's you know, we're not a rights holder yet, so still be kind of picking away at it as we normally do without doing, you know, a show of our own, for example. So, you know, real-time reporting on rumors and breaking news, instant analysis, our trade grades on everything that goes down. We already put one out for the Palmieri trade that went down this week. And then obviously I think Emily and I will probably hop on and do some video stuff during the day. But, you know, it's fun to cover the deadline. I wrote a column this week on ESPN.com. about regrading trades. Like, I took the last 5 years and took the top 10 blockbusters that we saw the deadline in those 5 years. And it's kind of amazing how the way that prospects or picks pan out in like a 3 year span can completely change the way that you see a trade, but also like just how some of these gambles paid off. I mean, like, the Boston Bruins made the Andre Kasha trade last year. And I thought, heck, that's great. I think I gave an A- for it. I changed that to an F. Guys played. I mean, when you make a trade and David Backes has played more games than the guy you acquired, like, it's bad. So it was fun revisiting some of those. And if you get a chance, check out the
Wish. Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And I know you guys will be busy. Keep it up. And let's do this again sometime soon.
You got it. Thanks,
there he is, the OG Puck Daddy, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, with us here on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. We'll focus in on the Jets-Habs game tonight coming up in just a moment with Ken Wiebe. As always, Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily brought to you by our friends at Boston Pizza. All Boston Pizza Winnipeg locations and Manitoba locations right now have the Call Your Shot promo going on. Get pizza flights or any Molson product, and you'll get an entry to win instant Boston Pizza gift cards, a custom-built backyard outdoor rink for next winter, or a VIP NHL experience. And you can get it all by eating in, taking out, or delivery at any local Boston Pizza. And we've got to give a shout out to our friends Nick and Nikki DQ. I think everyone's sort of getting over the blizzards that we had a couple days ago after the Jets' big win. But whether you're going for ice cream or maybe one of those amazing flamethrower burgers, pop by and see them at DQ Niverville, DQ Northgate, Pola Park, and St. Anne's. And big thanks to Nick and Nikki for their support of the program. All right, we got Jets Habs tonight. No Blake Wheeler for the first time in a long time. Let's get ready for it and take a look ahead to the trade deadline from a Jets perspective with Wiebe's World himself, Ken Wiebe, Sportsnet contributor, half of Kenny and Rennie, and our good friend here on WST. What's going on, Wieber? How are you, my friend?
Excellent, Huss. Always good to talk to you. We got a little Masters in the background, a lot of sports to discuss, and just a glorious time of the year overall. Yeah,
well, we can hit the leaderboard in a moment. Who are you on in the Masters heading into the tournament? Who is your guy?
In one of my pools, I have Sungjae Im as one of my players. So he had a nice start, two birdies in the first three holes, I believe. I'm still trying to get over Wes Gilbertson, my good old friend and former colleague at Post Media, beating me by two strokes in the final round of the Masters pool last year after Paul Casey and Bubba Watson turned in two of their worst rounds at Augusta ever. So I think I'm finally over it, but hoping for a little redemption in the pool side of things this year.
Ken, focusing on tonight's game, Jets.
Sure.
First time we've talked about a Jets team without the captain Blake Wheeler in the lineup for a long time. It means increased opportunity for Andrew Kopp, Matthew Perreault, and we'll see Jansen Harkins for the first time in what seems like forever.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, Jansen was I think cautiously optimistic, I think would be the way I would describe him in terms of his interview here today, used hopefully a few times. But here's a guy that we know is going to be as ready as humanly possible. Incredibly hard to stay in game shape, Huss, when you're not playing games for a guy who hasn't played since February 19th. I believe I counted that's a 22-game stretch of a healthy scratch. Awfully tough circumstance. But again, he'll be very energized. And for him, it may sound crazy, but if he goes back to the first time he skated with Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis in that scrimmage back at the Iceplex, he had a goal and an assist and was flying around the ice. So that it's not necessarily foreshadowing, Huss, but I do think that he'll be able to make a contribution. And it's important for him to get into the lineup twofold. He needs to get some games in. And also it's important for the Jets in terms of their expansion draft protected list. He's a guy that needs to play down the stretch here in order to satisfy one of those forward spots in terms of expansion.
Is that a big deal? We've talked about this before. I mean, I think that if everyone's healthy and Wheeler's back and he doesn't get the 10 games, isn't it basically a pretty easy phone call to Trevor Lewis or Nate Thompson saying, hey, here's an extra year. And by the way, you might get picked up by Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, Huss, I totally understand that viewpoint. And I would imagine, I mean, we know the way the Jets operate. There will be a contingency plan, which could be as simple as what you've outlined. But again, if they can take care of that without worrying about that, that's something that would be, a benefit for the team for sure. If you're a player and you're like Trevor Lewis, where you spent your entire career in Winnipeg in LA, and now you move to Winnipeg, I mean, I would think you would be open to signing a one-year deal, but I mean, you just don't know. And for players, I mean, if you choose to Seattle, it's different than being chosen by them. if you know what I mean, in terms of expansion. But I assume they'll be able to get that satisfied, and it won't be a big deal, but it would be another item to check off on the to-do list for Kevin Cheveldayoff. And in that regard, too, it means he wouldn't have to spend an asset, potentially, to acquire a player with term or with an extra year in his deal at the deadline going into Monday, where we know or we expect the Jets to be pursuing a defenseman and probably someone that can fit into that top four. And I mean, you just had Wish on. I mean, one of his favorite teams made an important deal, and maybe that was one of the dominoes that gets things going here. But we know to this point it's been a buyer's market, and a lot of those buyers are waiting for the prices to drop.
Yeah, well, speaking of that deal, what did you think? I mean, Palmieri and Zajac going for the Islanders' first rounder and a couple prospects that, I'll be honest, I'm not quite too familiar with. What did you make of Lou doing the deal when he did, and what can we learn about the market by the price that was paid to the Islanders, to the Devils, excuse me, for those two players?
Yeah, first
of all, both UFAs, by the way.
Yeah, great move by the Islanders, twofold. They've added some scoring to help with the loss of Anders Lee. There's no doubt about that. And we know that Lou Lamoriello is very familiar with Travis Zajac, the Winnipegger, as the guy who drafted him, and also as a guy who was under his employ and watch for a long time. We know that Travis has loved his time in New Jersey, just has celebrated his 1,000th game. But I think the lure of chasing the Stanley Cup was important to him, and I applaud him for making that move and going over to one of those teams in the East that I don't think we're talking enough about in terms of their ability to make a run at the Stanley Cup Finals. So you're also adding leadership with both of those players, veteran guys who are no maintenance players who will probably flourish in that Barry Trotz system. In terms of what it means for the price, I mean, it's still tough to say. I think a lot of the teams with the premier assets are still holding out hope that they're going to be able to maximize value for those assets. I mean, you had Frank on. He talked about Taylor Hall. What team's going to step up and get Taylor Hall? And who can afford Taylor Hall, Huss? I mean, that's a big ticket, and Buffalo can only retain 50%. You still got to make room for $4 million off the books. So, and again, we'd also know it's a tough season for Taylor Hall. Yes, he should be able to bolster a team's top six, but what are you going to be getting? I mean, it's not like it's been a very productive year. Having said that, I expect Taylor Hall would be a guy who would be very motivated, first and foremost, in chasing the cup, and also knowing that he wants to sign a big ticket deal at a time where a flat cap is staring him right in the face.
Well, let me ask you a question that I asked Wyshynski, speaking of Taylor Hall. I mean, what do you think this miserable season has done to Taylor Hall's value? I mean, never mind next offseason, like right now. I'll be honest, Ken. I thought the Islanders, considering they had lost Anders Lee, were the most logical and perfect spot for Taylor Hall to go. But then you sort of think about the sort of player Taylor Hall is, what he's been giving the Buffalo Sabres this year. Does that really fit in with the Islander team under Barry Trotz? I think Lou Lamoriello said no and went to Jersey. What is the value of Hall right now, and who will be willing to pay it?
Right, exactly. And again, you almost have a situation where, because it's been such a tough year, a team was going to want to bring in Taylor Hall as a secondary scorer. Not that he's not a primary scorer, but because his production has been down so considerably, it's much easier for Taylor Hall to find himself in a Phil Kessel situation where he can, bolster a second line or a third line with a lot of offensive talent and upside, but you're not relying on Taylor Hall to lead your team to the promised land. If he's a complementary piece that can help put you over the top, now that makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've heard a lot about Boston. Boston's talking about whether it's defense or maybe a little bit of extra scoring. Are they willing to push their chips all in? What about Colorado? I just think the issue with Colorado, they might have a little bit of wiggle room there, but it's a tough deal for them to make. But we know that, Joe Sakic was one of the people that was kicking the tires around Joe Sakic or around Taylor Hall in the offseason. I mean, could you imagine Taylor Hall going into somewhere like Colorado where they've already got a, pretty high-end top six? Sure, but it's got to also fit too. I mean, here's a guy who was a winner in junior, in Windsor. He played those great teams, the team in Brandon that, dismantled things in the Memorial Cup final in 2010. But at the pro level, Taylor just hasn't had a lot of playoff success. So I think that means a lot of the general managers are reluctant to part with either a first round pick or a top prospect in order to get his services for basically a month and a half stretch.
No, as I said, the luster is off of Taylor Hall right now, and his situation will be fascinating, both short term, but especially into the off season, and I applauded him for taking the 1-year, $8 million deal, sort of betting on yourself. But again, it is a bet, and bets don't always win. And right now, it looks like a losing bet that might cost him a lot of money. But let's take this back to the Jets. I know you guys will be talking about it on the show tomorrow quite a bit, as well as throughout the weekend. And we'll get to who you've got coming up on Kenny and Rennie tomorrow in a minute. We talked about David Savard. You've brought up Josh Manson, Alexiak. Give us your top three trade targets if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff right now. And who do you think is the most realistic to potentially end up as a Winnipeg Jet Monday afternoon?
Yeah, for sure, Hus. The market has severely shifted since the first kind of trade boards have been coming out, where Ekholm seemed like the obvious choice for any team looking for defensive help, including the Jets. But with the Predators winning 10 out of 12, I just don't see David Poile. I would see David Poile probably adding before he's subtracting a big piece like Matthias Ekholm. So David Savard, I do think, is garnering a lot of interest. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are a bit of a sleeper in terms of Savard potentially, but I think the Jets make sense for him on a lot of fronts as well, Hus. But to me, Josh Manson. So looking for a guy with term. Yes, he does have that. I think it's 10 or 12 team trade, no movement clause. But we know that Paul Stastny waived to come to the Jets as well. Would he be open to that? We don't know that for sure. But Anaheim is in a full rebuild mode. So yes, he has a young family, and of course he enjoys it around California. But I think that would appeal to Josh Manson, an opportunity to go to a place where, I mean, like Mark Scheifele said, where they play fun hockey and have a lot of talented pieces around. In terms of sort of some of those under-the-radar sleepers, I mean, I mentioned on Monday, Mike Riley, who we just saw with the Ottawa Senators, he's not a guy who's really flashy, but he's a guy who's had a really steady year, both analytically and in terms of production with the Ottawa Senators. He'd be more of a third-pairing guy, yes, but I do think that there'd be some value, and I think the price tag to get a guy like Mike Riley would be a lot lower than swinging for those fences. But I do think that there's probably somebody that none of us have talked about, us, similar to that Paul Stastny deal. I think there's, in this staring contest, I think somebody blinks at some point on Monday, and there is somebody that we haven't even, you know, pondered to this point that comes available and ends up with the Winnipeg Jets. I really, like I said, I've been scouring all of these lists. I can't pinpoint that person yet. I don't think it's necessarily Vince Dunn. Obviously, St. Louis had a big win last night against a 7-game losing skid, but they're still below the playoff line. And as we saw with Doug Armstrong, with Paul Stastny, they have some expansion issues already. I think Vince Dunn is a guy who could be available on Monday. I don't know what the price tag is, though, and I'm not saying it's a certainty that Winnipeg would be in on him, but here's a guy with championship experience, pedigree. He's an RFA on a low contract, and he would sort of fit with the culture that the Jets are building here.
Ken Weeb with us here on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. Weber, it's all but determined the four teams that will be competing in the playoffs in the North Division. We were speaking about the Jets and their targets on defense. Edmonton, Montreal, Toronto, which of those teams intrigue you the most going into the deadline, and who will be the busiest?
Yeah, I think Edmonton will probably be the least busy. I mean, there's been lots of talk about maybe pursuing a right-handed shot or centerman. Maybe it sounded like Ken Holland in his interview with Mark Spector this week had said he's not going to be overly active. Mark Bergevin has said the same thing, but the difference is that people don't believe it when Mark Bergevin says it, because the last time he said he wasn't making any moves, the next day he went out and got it, Eric Staal. So I think Montreal is probably the most intriguing in terms of maybe taking a big swing, but they're also getting Ben Chiarot back probably before the year is over. So to me, the big thing is what is Kyle Dubas going to do? I mean, yes, Jack Campbell looks like he's solidified the goaltending question marks, and they are expecting Freddie Anderson back. But does Dubas go out and get a forward, or does he go out and get an under-the-radar defenseman? I think that the Leafs were one of those teams that were definitely under-the-radar interest in Matthias Ekholm, but if he's not available, I could see them taking a wider swing for someone up front. We know that Nick Robertson is probably available in terms of their top prospect being an option for other teams. But again, someone's going to make a move that people are just going to say, wow, but we're just not sure who that's going to be and what it is. And I do think it still could be Winnipeg that makes that move. I don't think that the Blake Wheeler situation means the Jets will be taking a big swing up front. I also don't think it would prevent them from taking that big swing on the back end. But I mean, having watched the Moose recently, Hus, I watched Dylan Sandberg again. I know he missed the last game with an injury, but man, he's looking like a future Matthias Ekholm, Hus. I mean, he's just a big, strong guy, mobile, and just such a good person and a good leader. Pascal Vincent was blown away by what he's seen from Dylan Sandberg this year. So I would imagine the Jets will be quite reluctant to part with a prospect like Dylan Sandberg. And we know already to begin with that Ville Heinola is definitely on the no-fly zone when it comes to availability.
Ken, you know, things can change quickly. And in the team has been, again, touch wood, very fortunate with injuries so far this season, Blake Wheeler's current situation notwithstanding. But I have always maintained that what we see right now might not necessarily be what we see at the end of the regular season. What are the chances that we see a Heinola or Sandberg in your mind at some point, whether it be the regular season or even in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think Heinola would be the guy for me, Huss, that has the first crack between those two guys at getting in. Although, again, obviously Sandberg has the size and the physical nature and a little bit more maturity being a couple of years older. But Heinola's puck moving ability is something that I just don't think you can discount the possibility of him coming into the lineup at any point. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. I mean, Tyler Seguin was a guy, I think, sat out the entire first round the year that the Bruins won the Cup and made a contribution after that. So I still do think that Heinola has a chance to play for the Jets, not only down the stretch, but into the playoffs, depending on what happens on Monday, just because of the skill set that he employs. And again, you never know how deep teams are going to have to go. And that's why I mentioned a guy like Mike Riley. He might start as the number six or seven guy, but he's a guy who can handle top 4 minutes if you need him to. So that's why I think that that depth option would be something the Jets are pursuing as well. But I definitely do think that Heinola still remains on the radar. I know that a lot of fans are impatient and wish he was playing right now. And I do have to say, Huss, I was a bit surprised he did not get returned to the Moose from the taxi squad this week. But again, that's a reminder that there is a possibility that he's the next man up, even though right now it's Sammy Niku on the roster. But if the Jets do need a defenseman, I think that Heinola is still the next person that would be drawing in.
Ken, now, once we get past the deadline, it will be, you know, I really wonder, how do you see the final weeks of this season going? Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, we know who's in the playoffs. Paul Maurice himself said a couple weeks ago, as much as myself and I think a lot of the fans would love nothing more than in the 1 year of the Canadian division to have that North Division banner and have some bragging rights over people. Without fans in the building, it was pretty clear that Paul Maurice wasn't really sure how important home ice was at all. And I was a bit surprised considering the amount of line matching that goes up that, you know, having the last change in game seven does seem important from the outside. But what do you think the focus will be for teams like the Winnipeg Jets? How important will standings be, or will the focus be just trying to basically build your team, potentially rest players that need it to be ready for game one of the first round?
Yeah, Huss, I think the jockeying for position is something that we in the media take a lot more seriously or pay more attention to than the Jets. Would they like to finish first and get that North banner? Of course. But I think that what has become abundantly clear throughout the season, for a team to come out of the North, Huss, it's going to take beating two very good teams. I think that, yes, Toronto has established itself as the number one, basically going wire to wire here, and they have basically withstood every challenge so far. But even if a team is able to avoid Toronto in the first round, you're still playing a team in Edmonton that has two of the best players in the game and playing at peak levels, or B, you're playing the Montreal Canadiens, who we know had a playoff upset in the playoffs last year. They have a lot of depth and they have a team that has given the Jets trouble historically because of their speed game. So I don't know that there's a massive advantage to jockeying to get first. I mean, of course, it would be helpful. Right now, it looks like it's going to be almost impossible to catch the Leafs anyway. But I do think, like, to your point, I mean, based on what has happened and the Jets' inability to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl, yes, home ice advantage would be a benefit in those series, but not at the expense of having players play injured or not being sharp going in. Because we know the Jets' formula is quite simple, Huss. They need to be good enough defensively. They're going to rely on their high-octane forwards and their forward depth. And in order for the Jets to go anywhere, Connor Hellebuck will be the driving force. He will have to be the guy that pushes that team over the top.
Now, back to Wheeler for a minute. And at the beginning of the show, I was talking with Remus when we were discussing this. And I hesitate because there is a level of uncertainty. The minute they're saying they're suspecting a concussion, that comes with a whole bunch of things that are out of anyone's control. And so those injuries, I realize, are a little bit different. But let's just for a minute be positive on this and assume that, you know, it's something that'll keep him out a couple weeks, but he'll be coming back at 100%. We know how hard Blake Wheeler plays and the fact that he's been a night-in and night-out guy for the last 10 years, essentially. in your mind, Ken, how beneficial might 2 or 3 weeks be off for the captain come playoff time?
Yeah, twofold for me, Hus. I think it's the physical toll and the mental toll both. We know that Wheeler played through an injury earlier on this year that hampered him and was probably grueling both physically and mentally. We know that the short season, the compressed schedule will be a grind for anyone, including a 34-year-old captain who plays as hard as he does, as you mentioned. I do think there would be some benefits for Wheeler getting a chance to recharge, but again, then coming back from the stretch and being ready for the playoff run. The other kind of unintended benefit for the Jets will be, we've talked so much about that secondary core of players, that leadership group that is growing underneath them, that Andrew Cobb, that, you know, Adam Lowry, even now Mason Appleton, the way that he's played this year. I think that, I mean, Paul Maurice touched on it during the Zoom call. When a leader is lost, it's also on that leader and incumbent upon him to help, you know, grow the next line of leaders. And I think those guys, the alternate captains, the Shifleys, the Josh Morrisseys, the Kyle Connors, those guys will have an opportunity to take on a little bit of that leadership burden right now during the stretch drive when Blake Wheeler is out. So I think that's important for any team's evolution as it pertains to that as well. But as you mentioned, I mean, the biggest benefit for Wheeler, provided he comes out of this okay, and it's not a long-term thing, is that he would have a little less wear and tear on the tires going into what the Jets would hope to be a longer stretch in terms of the playoff push. I know you talked about it the other day. In 2018, the Jets had a great run. They won 9 playoff games, which is basically just past half as far as what it would take to win the Stanley Cup. And we know what kind of toll it took both physically and mentally on a lot of those players then. So, of course, I mean, I think that Blake Wheeler could easily return refreshed, as long as, again, with concussions, you never know. But it's one of those things where there could be some side benefits, even though, like I think I told you off air, I think if you're Blake Wheeler, he wants to play in every single shift in every single game. So I think it would be tough for him to accept. But right now he knows the most important thing, especially when it comes to a potential head injury, is full health and being ready to go. This is a guy who, you know, he's been in the league a long time. He would love nothing more than to win a Stanley Cup, but he also, you know, is a father as well. And I think there's the other part. We heard from Matthew Perreault, from Dylan DeMello, the added benefit that folks won't see is Blake's opportunity to spend some time at home with his wife and his kids. I mean, he's got a young family. I think that can help bring the joy level up during a season that we know has been taxing in terms of the mental toll of trying to play this compressed schedule and being basically, you know, holed up in a hotel room, 90% of the time.
Hey, what, I know you're talking to a lot of your colleagues throughout the country. What do you think the end game is for this Canucks situation? Do they get the games in?
I think they're going to get some in, Hus. It's hard for me to envision a scenario where they would get to 56. I don't think they'll get to that number. Can they get to 50? I mean, I know that points percentage is going to be a big factor here, but again, health has got to be the number one concern. It sounds like things are improving to a certain degree, but you can't put the Canucks in a situation where they're basically being asked to play minor hockey tournament style, where they're playing every day just to say, hey, congratulations to the NHL, you completed the entire season. I mean, would they like to finish the season? Of course, but not at the, you know, not at the expense of risking injury for players and just having a schedule that just wouldn't be right for either party. But I mean, at the same time, they want to try to get as close to 50 games as possible, because then you eliminate the opportunity for some other team to cry foul and say, well, if they had played those teams, they would have had some benefits or found a way to get into the playoffs. But as you mentioned before, Hus, because the four teams are pretty much set, barring a miraculous stretch run by Calgary, it looks like the four teams are pretty much set. So I don't think it's as big a concern. But at the same time, they want to play as many as possible.
Hey, maybe we'll see Vancouver and Calgary playing four games, like consolation games, while the playoffs goes on for them to get the 56 regular season games.
They're going to the B-pool, Hus. They're going to the B-pool.
Kenny, of course, if you haven't already, folks that are with us, make sure to check out Kenny and Rennie on YouTube. Ken and Sean Reynolds, they do a great weekly show on Friday mornings, as well as post-game coverage after the game. I know you guys will be firing it up tonight after the IC boys finish it up, but what do you and Sir Rainey have going on tomorrow, and tell us what time and how people see it, Ken.
Yeah, you bet. 9 a.m. Huss on the Kenny and Rennie YouTube channel. Also, we'll be riding live stream on, I think, Sean's Facebook and my Twitter accounts. We have Emily Kaplan from ESPN. We got Greg Wyshynski's hockey cohort there joining us. She's written some great stories this week, including one on Donnie Granato, the interim head coach of the Buffalo Sabres.
The red hot Buffalo Sabres.
Indeed.
Red hot Buffalo Sabres.
Indeed. And she wrote a great column a couple weeks back about the toll, like I mentioned, the emotional toll on players this year. And we'll also be joined by Cassie Campbell-Pascal as well of Sportsnet. So 9 a.m. Friday morning. We look forward to seeing everybody there after checking out the post game tonight. And everybody else, enjoy your Masters coverage. Huss, before I let you go, who did you sprinkle some of the action on in the old Masters?
The heavy piece went to my man Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I should have mentioned him too. I have him in my box number one. JT was the guy I went with as well.
Yeah, JT, I got him at 13-1 earlier this week, and then a little bit of a re-up at 12 earlier, and he was one of the final players to go off. So we'll just sort of be following him all afternoon here. And then the two long shots I had, Bubba Watson, who was at 100-1 for a guy that's won two green jackets. That number seemed crazy to me, as well as Sergio Garcia. But I see Sergio is stunk. He was 4 over the last time I've seen. So that may be burning a couple 20s, but we'll see. It should be awesome. I see that Webb Simpson has just had a double bogey. So he's fallen back. And there's been a number of guys fall back. Leaders are just 3 under right now. So everybody's still in it right now at the Masters, Ken. It should be, it's going to be a pretty fun weekend for hockey fans, golf fans, just sports fans in general. This is one of the true great times of the year, and of course the playoffs just around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should also mention I have Corey Connors in that pool as well. We know that Derek Ingram, the great Winnipegger, is down at Augusta there, so I know a lot of folks in Canada are rooting on Corey Connors this week. I think he was 1 over today, but he's the kind of guy whose game really shapes up well for the weekend at Augusta as well. So
yeah, if he could just avoid the 3 putts from 8 feet like he had on 16, he'd be in even better shape. Yeah, Canadians, Mac Hughes and Corey Connors both at 1 over par right now. Weber, I'll look forward to hearing what you and Sean Reynolds have to say after the game tonight and 9 a.m. tomorrow, YouTube, all the social channels. Where can people follow you on social for all the direction?
Yeah, just come on to Weeb's World on the Twitter and we can direct you any way we can. And also we got the podcast finally flowing on those fronts as well, Huss. So that's been awesome. And also another special thanks for the guest hosting appearance. We had a great late night with you and appreciate you filling in on the post game show a few weeks back. We had some great feedback and always some great chats, that's for sure.
Oh man, that was a heck of a lot of fun. I'll look forward to doing it with you guys again sometime soon. Weber, all the best, man. Have a great weekend and enjoy this game tonight.
You as well, Huss. Take care, my friend.
Great stuff. There is Ken Weeb. And oh man, just as we finished up, I mentioned that, you know, Royals got a great Royal Sports is a great setup for the weekend. Just got these pictures. All of the brand new NFL draft hats are in. They've got a full display. I'm just seeing this Chiefs one. Holy smokes, is it nice. So anyways, if you're a big NFL hardo and you want to be the first one with a draft cap for your favorite team, Royal Sports has them right now available this weekend. Let's get Michael Remus back in here because we do have to wrap it up a little bit earlier than normal as we're going to jump on CGOB with Hal at 2:15. Real great show today. Awesome having Greg Wyshynski on and Ken Weeb. Lots to talk about as we get ready for the trade deadline. But there is a game tonight. What are you expecting to see from the Winnipeg Jets as the Habs are the team that is on the second end of back-to-backs against a rested club?
Yeah, first of all, I'm not muted here, so we're good. I'm expecting...
Sweet.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, it's working. I'm expecting a great game for the Jets. I think they have an advantage. They've had some time off. The Habs played last night. We're not really too sure about, some of their lineup because they didn't have a morning skate, but we do know Gallagher out, Price out. I'm not really sure if they're relying too much on their backup goalie. Could we see Jake Allen back-to-back? So I don't know what the odds are, Huss, but the Jets seem to be in good position here to pick up 2 points.
Well, let me tell you what the odds are. It was interesting, and I mentioned this on yesterday's show because the odds on Coolbet were already up for the game, that the Jets were +113 underdogs on the road. I think people kind of cluing into the fact that Montreal played last night, Winnipeg didn't, and the Jets are now just above even money, +101, still an underdog, Montreal -119. So what? You snooze, you lose.
What did the Jets have to do to get favored in a close game? They only get favored against Ottawa. Is that the only team that they're ever favored against?
Hey, you know what? As I said, we kind of talked about it a lot, but not complaining, because that is what's made the Jets the best value team to bet on in the NHL this season. And if they can keep on getting wins, they'll keep on making Jet fans very, very happy.
They weren't even favored against Calgary, who's might be the worst team in the division right now. Weren't even favored against Calgary.
I don't get it. I'm not sure.
Who's
other
making
games,
these odds?
So, well, the bookmaker. You know what? Hey, there's not a lot of people that are betting on the Jets. So let's be those people and make some money. Why not?
I don't even think I should be upset about it as someone who wants to bet on the Jets. But as a fan of the team, you got to be pissed off about the disrespect from the odds makers.
Well, hey, you know what? As I said, we will just take it, keep on taking advantage of it right now. And hey, if the Jets can get a win tonight, you'll get more than double your money on Kubet as their +101 right now. Other games: Devils at Sabres, Panthers at Hurricanes, Lightning at Blue Jackets, Flyers, Islanders, Penguins, Rangers, Oilers, Senators, Bruins, Capitals, Preds, Red Wings, Dallas and Chicago, finishing up a very busy night in the National Hockey League. All right, tomorrow, as I mentioned, I'm pumping on OB in just a couple minutes. We're going to wrap this just a little bit earlier, but we'll have a big show tomorrow. Voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, is going to join us. We'll hook up with the folks from St. Adolph and get some support for their movement for the Kraft Hockeyville. And our good friend Kyle Ball-Harry, longtime game producer for the Winnipeg Jets, also involved in their content team, talking about the great 10-year anniversary series. And I believe they've got one, a special one coming up tonight, but on one of the most famous Jet fans ever. So, Remo, going to be a great one tomorrow night. Enjoy the game this evening. And thanks to everyone for joining us today on Winnipeg Sports Talk. Our golf reports, of course, from Breezy Bend. Thanks to Aikens Lake Cool Bet, Not Auto Corp, Boston Pizza City Place, Nick and Nikki DQ Group, and Royal Sports. Folks, that is it for us. Getting out a little bit early. Join me in just a couple minutes, 2:15. I'll be on CJOB with Hal Anderson. And again, at 4 o'clock, kicking off the OB pregame show with Kelly Moore. And we'll be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock, live here on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily, talking Jets, Habs, Masters, and, of course, looking ahead to Monday's NHL trade deadline. Thanks for being with us, everybody, and have a great night. Enjoy tonight's game.
Oh, my God! Oh! Shut it down!
Thanks for tuning in to Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube and your favorite podcast feed at winnipegsportstalk.com.